When I had my heart attack 2 years ago, I was in Melbourne, Australia, for two different events. One of them was a conference called Museum Next, and both organizers of both events, when they found out that I was going to have to stay in Australia for a few extra weeks, offered to pay for my Airbnb. That took a huge load off my mind at a time when I didn't need any extra loads. The organizer of one of the events, Museum Next, was Jim Richardson. Recently, Jim asked an open-ended question about how conferences should exist, and I told him I'd answer, because that's what you do for people who do you a good turn. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, William Hearn, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Jim has run a lot of conferences. The ones that I know about are Museum Next, which is a conference where museum curators and staff and researchers all get together to talk about where museums can go in the future. It turns out to be a rather complicated idea because the role of museums changes constantly and the public image of them is always in flux. I was brought in because I have some pretty strong views on copyright and presentation of materials, and I gave a rather spirited talk about the role of copyright in America versus Australia. Outside of the whole giving me a few extra weeks to relax and coalesce, Museum Next was a really well-run conference. The venue was beautiful, the instructions were clear. Everybody who was working on it was well-trained, listened, and responded very quickly to any questions I had. I feel like I was able to give a really, really good speech to a comfortable, and if not agreeing with me, at least listening audience. You don't get to having a really well-run conference unless you have things on your side: funding and constant questioning of your base assumptions. Jim's question was about trying to increase the audience for some of the conferences by doing some sort of virtual version, and he asked people what they thought about it. And the fact is, I have a lot of thoughts about conferences. I've attended many, many over the years. I've gone to ones that were run by small families. I've gone to ones that were run by institutions, publishers, professional conference organizers. I've kind of seen a little bit of everything. For many years, the only kind of gathering I ever went to would be things related to BBSs. The Oceany BBS meetings in the Galleria in White Plains, a couple 2600 meetings held in Citicorp Center in New York City, and later BBS meetings in Boston and Cambridge, where places like Cafe Aventura, the Prudential Building, and Au Bon Pan's patio reign supreme in my memories. But these were all gatherings at best. They didn't have an agenda. They didn't have some sort of printed invitations. You either knew how to get there because you were on the right BBS, or you read 2600 magazine, or you were completely in the dark. They weren't recorded, obviously. There weren't professional presentations in the Boston meetings, although I've been told that other meetings did have those. What they were friends connecting, giving an opportunity to trade items if you were doing floppy disk swaps or computer components, a way to chat people up, meet new people, discuss things that were on the boards, just being social. The functionality of these gatherings was merely to bring along a human aspect to something that would have otherwise been totally virtual. When I first heard about hacker conferences, things like SummerCon and DEF CON, my initial response was one of true and utter paranoia. I just saw no potential upside to traveling across the country into some sort of gathering of self-professed hackers and troublemakers, and then leaving myself open for a weekend as an easily identifiable person to keep track of later. No real upside. So I didn't go. I didn't really attend any technology-based conference until I was 28, and I went to my first DEF CON conference. The reason I changed my mind was that in 1998, I had started textfiles.com, and if I had ever been worried about painting a target on my back, I had already done it in bright fluorescent with multiple arrows and flashing lights to make me quite the easy target day in and day out. Why not just go to a conference then? By that point, DEF CON had been going on for 6 summers, and people told me it was a lot of fun. If DEF CON is your first conference, you have some pretty warped ideas about how they go. I had a really good time. It was all very strange, and I discovered, to my delight, that I was capable of keeping an audience interested during a full presentation. More importantly, once the floodgates were open with DEF CON, I just started going to lots of conferences. Certainly a lot of them were based around hacking and computer security. DEF CON, HOPE, Freaknik, Nauticon, Rubicon, DerbyCon. I made the rounds, but I also started going to other conferences. I hit fan-based gatherings like Comic-Con or WorldCon. I went to very small conferences I've long since forgotten the name of, and really huge things put on by O'Reilly or the Game Developers Conference. I got to see, in other words, all the different ways that organization helps and hurts when you put together these arbitrary gatherings of folks. I started making it my one and only priority at conferences to speak at them, to come up with something that I could give a presentation on and talk to 200 or 300 people at a time. It's very important to me to get on stage and talk about subjects that are meaningful to me and that I think will improve knowledge, both on the side of my audience and myself. Nothing makes you recalibrate what you believe in than having to talk about it on stage for an hour. Getting an audience reaction, getting reactions after that, it is a really good feedback mechanism. After I became known for making documentaries and other types of talking, I started to get invited to conferences, conferences I would have never thought of, never gone to. A typical example would be Bacon, where it was a conference talking about development, but also bacon. Every morning of the conference, free bacon breakfast, but also some really insightful talks I would have never encountered otherwise, including an overview of how GitHub worked with remote workers. The archive has benefited heavily from that shift, and I'm glad I was able to advocate it from an area of expertise thanks to this GitHub speech. Getting back to Jim's question. Jim runs these conferences, but they cost money. They cost a lot of money, both to put on and to attend. If you're somebody who wants to attend a conference, it's not just the admission price. It's the flight. It's the travel. It's the hotel. My estimate for most DEF CONs is that attending them, even with a speaker badge and going to Las Vegas, was costing me about $1,000. Similar for other events. I mean, there's all sorts of ways to save money on it. Sleep in your car, stay with a friend, bring your own meals. You can definitely shave a few dollars off here and there. But on the whole, it's going to cost you. And this leads to the fundamental question, what are conferences for? Why do we have them? Why do we assemble people to talk about a subject, to have vendors around that subject, to have speeches, to have meet and greets, to have a product, a company, a process, maybe an industry like games or cheese making. Maybe it's about a specific event. Maybe it's about a specific cultural product. Regardless of the subject, of the thing that the conference is for, they often all share the same components. They need big rooms for people to meet in. They need to charge money to make up for how much it costs to rent the space. They need to have organizers who put together the programs, the schedules, contact the speakers, reimburse the speakers, come up with the insurance costs, pay for the catering or the food, or come up with a list of places you can go to get your own food. There are, and I have experienced this from all sides, 1,000 different ways it can all go incredibly wrong. The reason that hotels tend to run a lot of conferences is because of the amount of headaches it removes for the organizers. They don't have to think about where people are staying. They don't have to worry about heating a place or getting chairs put out or making sure that there's food and bathrooms and functioning sound systems. It can all be handled as part of the hotel package. Some hotels are cheap. Some are rather expensive. In some cases, you get staff assigned to you. In other cases, you're kind of on your own. There are alternative ways to do this, of course, ways to be really exotic. Maybe renting out a farm. I went to a demo party that was held in a farmhouse that had private rooms, but also bunk beds for people to stay cheaply. And then comes the curation. Coming up with the people who will speak at your event, the folks that will draw in attendees, the guests of honor that you'll bring in from around the country or the world to speak on the subject that your conference is about. Recent attention has come to diversity in conference speakers, but there's a whole other range of problems that are there anyway. Different speakers have different needs. Some won't speak without being paid a certain amount. Others may not be able to make it even though they said they did, or they want other considerations for their speech. Just the AV concerns can drive someone to distraction and be a full-time job for just somebody on the organizing staff who's not even doing the AV. Now, either you're listening to this and you've been to a bunch of conferences, or you haven't been to many at all. I don't know how you can attend a lot of them and not be aware of how difficult it is to put these conferences on. And if you've not attended a lot, or any, then you're probably a little surprised at how much can go wrong, and what a miracle it is when the amount of things that go wrong are relatively minimal. Congregations of people are difficult. Getting them focused on something is difficult. The potential for things going wrong is huge. The question that Jim Richardson put out was, what about virtual conferences? And to that, I simply say, a virtual conference would be a great idea. It's a way for folks who can't afford all of those flights and costs and who can't leave where they are for extended periods of time, getting involved and learning about a subject they care about. But I also believe that if one chooses to put on a virtual conference, they need to use the same level of care, of concern, and staffing that they do with a regular conference. The main advantage virtual conferences have on the organizing side is the ability to use a lot less resources to make something that sort of seems like a regular conference. But it's also my firm belief that one of the most inefficient ways to provide information and education is the conference format. A single person up on stage with a series of slides or images, or maybe none at all, talking at a certain rate to hundreds of sitting people. I'm not 100% sure that's the way to go. Those hundreds of people need to be fed. They need to be sheltered. They have their own agendas, their own time frame. Maybe they come in late, leave early. Maybe they spend the whole time reading email. Maybe they sit next to somebody and the two of them engage in a conversation that drives everybody nuts. And if you're a speaker who's not used to that, you pause out, you try to respond. The potential for somebody to interrupt and start just asking questions, and I've seen that more times than I would like, it's huge. People are people, and a room full of people is a beast unto itself. In a virtual conference, you can get rid of many of those aspects. Everybody connecting is there because they want to. if you've made it time shiftable, people can come to it later so that if they don't understand what's going on, they can rewind it, play it again, and still get the most out of it. But unless all the people watching have some way to communicate with each other, have some ability to either leave commentary, add links, or find out who else is watching and why they're watching, then you're not much of a conference at all. You're, at best, a YouTube playlist. I think it takes a truly talented organizing staff to make a virtual conference have weight, to put together a set of talks that lead into each other, to record the sound and the video at the top quality to get around the fact that you don't have to pay for a conference hall, and to bring into focus the subject that you're trying to portray. There's an organizer I deeply, deeply respect. His name is Andy McMillan. He's the co-organizer of XOXO. He's the organizer of the Build Conference, both of which I've attended. And he's put together other rosters, other conferences, and each time he shows an almost masterclass version of how to organize. If he wrote a book on how he does it, I would buy that book, because I suspect it's less about room organizations and insurance and more on focusing on the story that the conference is telling. He has a beautiful, innate skill in piecing together a conference that really, I don't know, feels more like an experience. There aren't many like him. There are organizers who have a skill with keeping a lid on things, which is no mean feat in itself. The kind of people who, finding out that the doors don't work, or that there's no video on this channel, or that there's some sort of fundamental problem with the venue, they're just good at making you think about the organizing as little as possible. And I think those folks wouldn't flourish organizing a virtual conference. They set up a stage, but they're not really into what the players are doing or what the play means. And in a virtual conference, the play will be everything. Thinking of it, I do remember one virtual conference that I did attend. It was called ConfCon, and it was a phone-freaking conference held on a conference line. They had a range of speakers, and they made me the keynote one year. And so I guess there's some lessons to be learned from that. ConfCon had a schedule, and it did have a list of speakers. But obviously it had no venue. It only required people to call into a phone conference. I thought it was really important to give historical context to how important conferences were to phone freaking. Once freaks discovered that there were these bridges that people could call into and talk to other phone freaks for hours on end, it changed utterly the experience of phone freaking. Suddenly, you had a social group. You had voices that could tell you things, or make fun of your ideas, or roust and joke and jibe and reach out and connect with people. It was a whole other plane to what was otherwise a rather solitary hobby. It was important to me that ConfCon start out that way. All the recordings from ConfCon are online, along with most of the conferences I've spoken at. I think in the realm of time, those recordings become what the conferences are. They're the ways that people can refer to what was spoken about, that you can see where someone's thoughts go as they speak over the years. It's really important to me that these performances, and they are performances, persist and can become part of the canon of history, of reference. And as our technology becomes better and better at working with audiovisual materials, turning them into searchable and reference-ready documents is inevitable. Nothing makes me happier than a person who maybe doesn't have the means or the time or the opportunity to go somewhere to do something, instead finds themselves with the materials that can let them experience most of what that was at home, without it also being a sacrifice. one of my talks, how I got sued for $2 billion, is already north of about 1.2 million views on YouTube. And while there were about 1,500 people in the room that year, the fact that many thousands more have been able to enjoy the humor and the lessons there, how could I not be overjoyed? I hope we see this going forward. I hope we see conferences that exist only online, that are jumping off points for learning more about subjects, for learning more about people. But I think it has to take in some of what regular conferences have always provided, a space that folks meet up with others of a like mind that they wouldn't otherwise know about, who never forget that the purpose of conferences is to connect and to have ways to connect to others, even if they've only known them through a screen. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Forrest Fuqua, James Bekoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been helping me get out of debt. I just want to follow up and say that while Jim Richardson was one of the key people in covering my expenses and staying in Melbourne, there were at least a half dozen other people who had been organizing things both at ACMI and Museum Next, and who all came together with support and a lot of caring to make sure that this unexpected event in my visit to Melbourne was as little a disruption as possible. Thanks to all of you. It's one thing to be my handlers, to be the folks who tell me where to stand and when I'm speaking. It's another to be a friend. Thank you again.